Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a returning guest, Paul Selig, and we're going to be talking about his new book, The Book of Truth, the Mastery Trilogy, and it is book two in the Mastery Trilogy. In The Book of Truth, Paul offers readers the enlightened and panoramic perspective of his spiritual guides, to share with him their otherworldly wisdom. The second installment of the highly anticipated trilogy that started with Paul's Book of Mastery. The Book of Truth places an entirely new valuation on human relationships and begins first by transforming our own understanding of who we really are. Paul was born in New York City, attended New York University, and received his master's degree from Yale. You can find out more about his public workshops, private readings, and books by visiting his website, which is www.paulselig.com, and it's PaulSelig.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Paul to the show. Hello, Paul.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. And I am, as I mentioned, this is book number two. Now, you were on my show, it was January 18, 2016. So almost a year and a half ago when we talked about the Book of Mastery, which was book number one. So I do want to let listeners know that if they would like to listen to that, that's in the archives, and they can just go to January 18, 16 and listen to that. But for those who may not have heard you on that show or maybe don't know much about you, can you explain a little bit about, as I mentioned, you're a psychic and a channeler. So can you talk a little bit about the gift of channeling and how you came to recognize that?
Okay. Well, you know, I didn't start off to be a channel. I don't know if I necessarily believed in it. I'd read half of the Seth book when I was a graduate student and thought it was really interesting, but I wasn't necessarily drawn to that kind of work. I began to open up psychically a bit in my mid-20s, and I studied a form of healing, and I found that when I had my hands on people, I could hear things for them. I would get information clairaudiently, and as I began to get verification for the accuracy of the information, I began to trust it more, and gradually over time, the guides that I work with began to teach through me. And this was going on for many years, but they began lecturing the way they do now, probably not until about 2008. I'd been hearing smaller pieces of information, you know, and the information would always be accompanied with energy and attunements to energy. And around 2008, sort of everything shifted, and I began taking dictation, and shortly thereafter, they began dictating books. What a channel is, or at least what I am, is really a radio, sort of for higher information. So when I work psychically, I'm working with the living and I'm hearing them and I'm interpreting information. When I'm channeling, I'm literally taking dictation. And that dictation is then transcribed, and, you know, the stuff that's for the books is in the books, and I do this in workshops, you know, all over the world now as well, where the guides just come through and teach.
Yeah. So now, when you say that, when you're kind of tuning in, I mean, there talks about energy and then attunement to energy. So when the guides are communicating to you, so you actually feel an energetic difference, and that's how you know, because a lot of people, you know, I would think have their guides talk to them, you know, but trying to recognize and discern, you know, that kind of communication can be difficult.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, it's not for me now, but I'm used to it, and I also work with the same guide. So, you know, I've learned what it feels like to work with them. When I work, and there are different degrees of removal that happen with me in terms of my consciousness. When I'm dictating a book or I'm running a workshop, I'm very much receded. Imagine that I'm in the back seat of the car letting my guides drive, and I'm sort of keeping one eye on what they're doing. And if I hear something that I don't quite trust or doesn't quite make sense to me, I've been known to lean over the front seat and say, please explain this, or I don't understand this. When I'm working psychically, it's like I'm sitting in the front seat of the car, and I'm driving a bit more or sharing the wheel with the guides unless they want to come in and grab the wheel and run the session. But very often they're coming in with information that's specific to the client, but I'm also accessing information psychically. For me, the difference is tone and vocabulary and the energy that comes. So, yeah, I do feel a shift in my field, in my energetic field before I begin. Initially, way back when it first started, it was a pressure on my forehead. And initially, I felt like somebody was literally pressing their lips against my forehead and impressing the words into me, and the vibration would then move to my mouth, and I would form those words with my lips. I don't have that experience anymore, but I still whisper the words as they come and repeat them, which is how it started many years ago, and it just seems to be a somewhat comfortable way for me to work. Sometimes I work directly, but when I work directly, I actually don't remember almost anything of it, and it's a little spooky for me to recede quite that far.
Yeah, I would think, you know, that would be scary, you know. I mean,
it's not
in
scary.
The sense
it's, yeah.
You know, I mean, in the sense that, you know, because, you know, people work so hard to, you know, being in control, you know, of themselves, and, you know, and kind of allowing that that presence, you know, to kind of, you know, put Paul to the side, you know.
I would say
you obviously have built up trust to be able to do that.
Yeah, I do have to trust, and I do trust the guides I work with, and if that happens when I'm channeling, which once in a while it does, I'm actually okay with it. I think that, you know, I have a way of working that has been successful, which means I'm receded enough to allow them to come through and do their stuff, but I'm also able to question the teaching, which I'm comfortable doing. And, you know, and that's fine. You know, there may be come a time when I'm more removed and I don't remember anything that comes out of my mouth. I understand, you know, Edgar Cayce was asleep, you know, when he was channeling, and he's the man that, you know, coined the term channeling. I'm present, but I'm removed. I think that's the best way to say it.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, you've been talking about your guides for a little bit. Exactly, have you been able to determine who they are or what they are?
Well, yeah. I mean, to the extent that I'm able, yes. I mean, I call them the guides because an ex of mine, when my ex found out I was a psychic and was hearing information, used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that. So now they were called the guides, and I became very comfortable with that, and that's why people tend to know them as the guides. The name that they've given is Melchizedek, which, as I understand it, is a priesthood or an order of teachers. They say that they come from the Christ consciousness. It's a level of vibration. I'm not sure I understand what that necessarily means, but I do understand the teaching. And the teaching is a loving teaching and a very direct teaching about the manifestation of the divine self or the true self in form, which is what they have said since the very beginning their mission was with all of us, was to support us in realizing our divinity in manifestation and fullness in a way that we can realize and therefore transform our world. So it's a collective their teachers. They say that they work with the students who are working with their texts. And, you know, when I see the reviews on Amazon, people are often saying, I'm reading the book and my body's vibrating. I'm reading the book and I'm seeing auras. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of phenomena attached. And when I'm doing workshops, they come through with an energy that's extremely palpable. People can feel it. And the guides are very adept at attuning those who come to the energies that they work with so that they can be working with themselves and with others as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does seem that, you know, there's that kind of resonance, you know, that happens when, you know, you have, you know, you put down the teachings into words, you know, and, mm-hmm. and people will read that as well. It's kind of just mm-hmm. like tuning forks, you know, they'll mm-hmm. kind of do that. Now, you did mention a little bit about how you sometimes question, you know, the mm-hmm. information, mm-hmm. and, you know, I know from reading both of your books, you have that I mean, it's a, in a way, it's kind of like conscious channeling in the sense that, you know, Paul is right there. He's not only hearing the words and writing the words, transcribing the words, but also processing and questioning and actually, mm-hmm. it seems very interactive for a kind mm-hmm. of channel than I think most people are aware of.
Perhaps I don't read other channel work, you know, and I really don't know much about how other people work. I know what my experience has been. You know, somebody once said to me, you know, why don't you channel the right way, which was not whispering and repeating. And my guides had a wonderful laugh about that because they said, as if there's a right way to channel. It's already pretty crazy. So, you know, the way that I work, you know, I was a classroom teacher for 25 years. I taught at, you know, NYU, and I ran a graduate program at another college. And I, while I am the radio for this work and for this transmission, I'm also a student of the work. And I think any good teacher would be willing to take a question from a student. And so because I'm there and because I don't write the books, but my name appears on the cover, I feel some sense of responsibility to the quality of the transmission and to the information that comes through. And that means if I'm not understanding it, I want to know why. You know, if the guides that I work with were to say the moon is made of green cheese, I'm sure I would say, hey, wait a minute. And then they would have to explain it to me, you know, in order for me to be able to continue to trust and to continue. So at this level, I suppose it's sort of like a Socratic way of teaching. In some ways, I'm a student and I question the teacher. But I don't interrupt as much as it seems. In the Book of Truth, they actually, I don't know what the word is, they preempted my questions by saying, Paul has a question, right when I was about to make a question, you know, and in that way they were able to keep the teaching on track. So there were actually very, very few interruptions. In a couple of the books, there was one in the Book of Mastery, which was the fourth book and the first of this trilogy. Early in that book, they said, you know, nothing is real. And that was the big statement. And I understood that. I've heard things like that. I was able to say, okay. And on the top of the next chapter, they said, everything is real. And I panicked because I thought that they were contradicting themselves. And I questioned the teaching, and they had to unpack it for me. And it took a little while, but they did, you know. And part of the reason for this is that the rule with all of these books that I have honored is that because it's a channel text, it won't be edited, which means if they say something mm-hmm. that's not grammatically correct or bumpy, it goes in the book that way. And what you're reading when you read this book is not a book that's been written, at least by me. You're reading the transcript of an oral teaching, which reads remarkably like a book that's been well thought out and planned and put together. But again, that's not by me, because I sit in a chair for these sessions without having any idea where we're going to go, except I know what chapter we're up to in the sequence. But I don't know if a chapter is over until they say this is the end of the chapter, or they say here is a new chapter and here's the title. So that's the process, and it's an interesting one, I agree.
Yeah. I'm going to be completely honest with you. One of the mm-hmm. things, the challenges that I had with mm-hmm. channeled readings, or had,
I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, one of the things is quite often the messages were so non-specific. The ability to apply the message to the physical plane to me was, it was like, you know, I'm here, I'm doing this, tell me what, you know, how that translates. And what one of the things that I found with your quote interruptions, you know, or your clarification aspect was that where you was like, well, wait a minute, you know, this is where I am, or this is my understanding of this, you know, this is the kind of, the, and to me that, you know, that kind of puts it on a whole different level. You know, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, I can read Paul's work. You know what I mean? Because I can apply it. You know, that's the important. I mean, if they're going to teach, if you don't put into practice what the teacher teaches, then what's the purpose?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that it is a practical teaching. I think when the series began, and that was with the first book, I Am the Word, which was the first series of books. There were three before this trilogy. I thought that they were teaching a bit more theoretically than it turns out that they are. They're really speaking of physical manifestation of the divine in form as who and what we are in order to support in the transformation of a world that is in great change. I mean, it's a trippy teaching, but when I look at how these books have grown from one to the next, they're all building on prior teachings in order to support us in this. So there is something, I think, enormously practical. I think it's one thing to say, well, there's a bit of God, or if you want to call it God or whatever you want to call it, in everybody. So, yeah, I can see that sort of God is in everybody, and that's nice, except when I can't stand them, or when they do something that I don't like, or when I disagree with what they believe in. And the convenience of that stuff kind of has to go out the window with this stuff because it's just not the teaching. So the idea that the divine is who each one of us is, and we've actually misconstrued identity by overemphasizing the personality structure as being who we are and not the eternal self or the aspect of us that is of source and knows that, and that seeks to realize itself as and through us, which they say is the teaching, is actually something that is palpably real in some ways once you get into it. So it's never been a teaching that I think has been tremendously comfortable or maybe easy for people, and myself included. It's not one of these, you know, just follow your bliss teachings. I think the guides, I'm sure they would agree, don't follow your bliss, but they're also going to say, and in order to follow your bliss, you're going to have to let go of what you think bliss is supposed to be, because that's in some ways indoctrinated thought. And who you truly are actually knows how you can best be of service to your fellow man, but it may not conform to what your culture says you should be. So the teachings are challenging, but I hope in a way that's inspiring. You know, they are to me. But again, they're not comfortable for the ego who wants to be able to just sort of dismiss everything or put everything in a soundbite.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, and in a way, possibly my preoccupation with application, you know, to the physical world is something what they're suggesting I should consider to let go of, to recognize.
I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. No, and that's not what I was saying at all. I was actually saying I understand it, and it is practical. I think the teachings are practical.
Right.
The attachment to outcome is something that they do talk about a lot in their work, and that our attachment to outcome is the small self and how we think things are supposed to be. I mean, these guides have said, you know, we have no idea what enlightenment is because you can't know it until you're enlightened, you know, and that it's really a teaching of being who and what you are, and this kind of aspiration to some other consciousness really isn't the point. But the byproduct of this teaching is realization, and they say realization and knowing are the same thing. So they're giving us tools that I think we're hopefully applying, people that are working with this text. But yeah, it's not about, you know, becoming perfect. It's about realizing the inherent perfection of the divine self, which is a bit different.
Yeah. I have a listener in the chat room who has a question, and it's Corrine, and she was saying that she was told by a medium recently that she was meant to do automatic writing, and that's where she should focus. So now, since you talked about the process that you incorporate, kind of being a transcriber, so to speak, of the information coming through, how does what you do compared to the idea of automatic writing, and what's your perspective of that whole area?
I think it depends on who the person is and where their development lies. I'm not reading. I mean, I'm not going to read for her right now. I might get other information. But I'll tell you my innate sense. You know, I think automatic writing, which is really sort of allowing your hand to be moved across the page by something else, is not a good idea, because you better well know what you're allowing yourself to be open to. My grandma was a nice woman, but she was married 4 or 5 times, and if I want to get advice on relationships, I don't need to get it from her on the other side, you know?
Right.
I mean, just because somebody's crossed over doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's who I need to be listening to. So I listen to who I listen to, and that's not to say that the people should be frightened. I just sort of equate it with safe sex. It's a smart thing to practice. When it's raining out, it's nice to have an umbrella. You don't have to get wet, you know? So automatic writing and inspired writing, I think, are somewhat different. Inspired writing is allowing inspiration to come through you, and I think that can be quite good. But I think that there's a difference between inspired writing and then using the pen sort of as a Ouija board and saying, okay, somebody come and talk to me through my hand. And there are people that work effectively that way, and there are mediums that I think are wonderfully developed that can do wonderful work. They're painting pictures, you know, with spirit, you know, and all of that. So I just think it's who we are. I'm not a trained medium. I've been grateful to have been supported in my work by some fine ones who've been able to help me understand what I was undergoing. But one of the things that I do believe in with this stuff is discernment is important, you know, and I think that any entity or we can call it spirit, I don't know what you want to call it, that there's two things that I tell people to be watchful for. One is fear. So anybody that's telling people to be afraid or to be, you know, to giving information that is frightening, I think is to be wary of. You know, somebody once said to me, watch out for the blonde man with the beard. And I spent 2 years not talking to any blonde men with beards. I was like, I don't want to go near one of those. You know, I mean, maybe it saved my life. I don't know. But the other thing is to be watchful for information that tells us that we're special. Because I think that can be kind of seductive and misleading. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, my guides actually are pretty quick to tell me I'm not special. but that's the way that I work. Unique, yes. Loved, yes. Cared for, yes. But, you know, there's a difference between, you know, I mean,
The other is playing to the ego.
Yeah, they don't play to the ego. They don't play to the ego. Thank you. That was much more efficiently said.
Well, you know, and I love the distinction between inspired writing versus automatic writing. I mean, I can understand the wariness with automatic. Now, for you, you're obviously getting the information from your guide. So do you audio record it and write it? Okay.
I don't write anything anymore. Once in a while, I write an introduction to a book, or I'll write, you know, responses to an interview. But no, the books are all transcribed from the audio recordings of them. Some of the book, about 100 pages of the Book of Truth, was done in front of an audience at the Esalen Institute, you know, with the tape recorders going. And then those were transcribed by somebody else. So that's been my process.
Okay, great. That was kind of what I wanted to kind of get clear on, you know, because, you know, with the type of work that she may want to do, you know, that may be a process, you know, for her to use. So, okay, so, yeah, so now we're going to, I'm going to kind of shift, you know, to talking a little bit more about the Book of Truth, which is why we're here. First of all, it is the second in the trilogy. So can you explain to the listeners the trilogy? What how was it shown to you that this trilogy would be focused?
Well, I wasn't planning on it once again. I was doing one of my teaching jobs, and my literary agent called me and said, you know, Penguin's asking when there's going to be another book, and I was saying, well, I don't know, and I don't think it's going to be for a little while, and I don't know what else if they have anything else to say. And the guides piped in and said, no, we want to do a trilogy, and we want to start. Basically, they said soon. They started sooner than they said they would, but they started within a month of that first, of my first being told that they were going to go for it. So that's, and I was given the title, and that's it. I was given the title of the first book when it came. The second book, I was given the title of the book. No, the first title I was given at the very beginning, before the sessions began. The Book of Truth, I didn't know the title until the very first time I sat down for the session for the book. And they've given me a title for the next book. I assume that they'll stay with it, but it's, again, their book, and if they have something else in mind, I'm sure I'll hear about it. But, you know, it really is a teaching. It's a teaching in supporting us in our own realization of who and what we are. And there's a real emphasis now in their work on the what, which means manifestation, the divine as manifest in form.
Yeah. Okay. We're about halfway through the show, Paul, so I want to take just a quick break and do to invite listeners that if you'd like to call in and ask Paul any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, again, you can type in your questions there. And then when we come back, Paul, I want to kind of find out from you how the Book of Truth is different from, you know, your other channel books today. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Paul Selig. We're talking about his new book, The Book of Truth. It is the second book in the Mastery Trilogy. And again, you can find out more about this book, about Paul's lectures, audiobooks. He's got a whole bunch of information available on his website, which is www.paulselig.com, P-A-U-L,
selig.com. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how is the Book of Truth differ from any of the channel books you've done before, or is it?
Mm-hmm. It is, actually. It's a very direct teaching on one large theme, which is truth. And they talk about truth perhaps differently than we think about it. I think we like to think about our individual truths, and they're really talking about universal truth or eternal truth. And they say what is true is always true. I mean, I guess it's always true that at this moment in this time in this dimension or planet, whatever you want to call it, you and I are having this conversation, but it's not always true that we're talking. So the guides are speaking about truth as an energetic field that is really here and is transforming all of us. We're all in interaction with it now. And they say that, you know, what is in truth, you know, this is the quote, in truth a lie cannot be held. And they say in the field of truth, those things that are out of alignment with truth are going to have to be reclaimed, renown, released, and, you know, transformed in some way. And they say that we're in this process now. It's happening. They equate it to a tidal wave. So it's an interesting teaching, and it's the first time they've really gone into a subject like this with such depth.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that, first of all, when I saw the title of the book and when it came out, mm-hmm. you know, the Book of Truth, I thought, you know, in these days, you know, mm-hmm. in this physical realm, there is such truth. As a matter of fact, I had the news on kind of in the background while I was, you know, reviewing things.
Yeah.
And it was like truth. I mean, it was just like boom, boom, boom. I mean, so it seems that right now there is this focus on, truth, not necessarily mm-hmm. the greater truth that we're, you know, that the mm-hmm. book talks mm-hmm. about, the divine truth.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's more the, I think what they call it, the daily truth, you know, that is kind of what's, mm-hmm. slamming us in the face, but it seems to be really effective in raising at least awareness to the mm-hmm. topic.
Well, I think what we're seeing now seems to be kind of what the guides are talking about. I mean, this book was dictated, the sessions completed over a year ago, so it's interesting to be in these times and to watch some of this play out. But, yeah, I mean, they say, you know, basically that the stuff that's not in truth is going to put up its fight on the way out. I mean, the guides say that who and what we are finally, whether or not we can agree to it or agree, they say agree to it or not, like it or not, is an aspect of the divine. That's the truth of who we are. And they say in truth a lie cannot be held. And when you align to this other vibration, to this acceptance and this claim of who and what we are, those things that stand in the way of that expression that aren't true really need to move. And I think they are talking about this really now in terms of a collective event. This is something that we're all experiencing, you know, as a civilization. So, you know, we have a lot of collective agreements about what it means to be just anything, you know, these things that we all assume to be true because we inherited that information. And just because we inherited information doesn't necessarily mean that it's accurate. So a lot of stuff that I think we've assumed would always be there may be, you know, up for some change through these times.
Yeah, I agree. Now, in the book, you know, there's talk about, again, divine truth and daily truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it interesting that it kind of, it just mirrored the idea of a divine self and a small self. So
mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the perspective of self, you know, and then how the truth, you know, the two
the two perspectives of truth, or the two manifestations of truth, and how they kind of mirror that same kind of situation or same.
I'm not sure I'm quite following. I mean, if you're asking about the difference between what the guides call the small self and the true self, I can try to speak to that.
Let's talk about that. Yeah, first. Okay.
All right. Well, the personality, they say, or the small self, is essentially something of a structure, you know, that's been born through many things: how we're raised, what religion we're raised in, what time and century we're born in, you know, all of the collective data of our culture and the expectations of a culture. So we have a personality in some ways that is, they say, something of an amalgamation of data. And while the personality has a function, you know, it helps to know, you know, whose desk to go sit at work, and, you know, all of these things. I mean, you get to know, you know, you don't lose your individuality with this, but you do realize who you are as an eternal self, or the divine self, or the God within, whatever you want to call it. So the guides say, you know, the true self knows the small self thinks. And that's one sort of easy way to begin to comprehend it. But they say that the divine self, the true self, has really one requirement, which is its own realization as and through each of us. So the divine seeks to be made manifest or realized through us. And I guess the guides would say that, you know, we are already this, but we've misconstrued our identity as the personality structure. So part of what we're having to do, if I understand the teaching correctly, is be willing to release the known, or what we thought we were, and who we thought we were as a small self, you know, through all of this historical narrative that we tend to bring to our lives and our interactions.
Yeah, and so I understand that. When I was reading the book, you know, and I got to the section about, you know, divine truth versus daily truth. To me, it seemed that the quote daily truth really kind of worked around the same idea as the small self, in the sense that, you know, truth about, you know, when we're talking about culture or indoctrination or, you know, those kinds of things, you know, we have these quote little truths, you know.
Yeah.
And then the divine truth fits very much with the divine self. It's the you know, the truth of who we are, what we are, you know, what is, you know, versus what we're telling ourselves to be.
That's well put. Thank you.
Okay, so right now, again, it seems that we're confronted with a lot of these small truths, the daily truths, the things that, you know, that is a lie, that's not right lie, or, you know, that is, you know, and it seems that what's being highlighted is what is true for me is not true for, you know, a different truth for someone else.
That's not
so
truth,
I mean,
that's opinion, opinion, that's not truth, and that's the difference there. You know, this is better than that as somebody's opinion. This is more valuable than that is also a collective opinion, because we decide what has value. So a lot of these ideas of that people are calling truth, I'm going to honor my truth. You can honor your own calling, and I guess you can call it your truth, but I think what the guides are speaking to is something a little bit different than that.
Okay, and what they're speaking to is more of the essence of who we are, how we fit into the huge overall picture.
I don't know. Maybe that's a way to put it. Maybe that's a way to put it. I'm seeing if I can think of an illustration for you. You know, who I thought I was supposed to be when I was younger was very much imprinted by my age group, my family, what I was expected to be given the family structure, who I thought was cool at the time that I would aspire to be like. I mean, there were all these things that I think in retrospect were all perfectly fine and ways for me to learn through. I don't denigrate any of them. But my small self had an agenda for who I was supposed to be based on presumption and a bunch of ideas. Many of those had very little to do with me in retrospect. I mean, imagine the person who grows up in a family of doctors who's expected to be the doctor and goes to medical school and is absolutely miserable. And I meet these people with some frequency. They may be doing fine work in the world, but in their heart, you know, they're playing in a rock and roll band someplace, you know. So the idea of an infinite truth or an eternal truth is a little bit different, I think. The guides work with these things. They call them claims of truth, and they say when something is true, it is always true. And one of them is, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. Now, my personality self doesn't necessarily know any of this stuff, but the guides say that the true self does. The true self always knows who he is. So it's only the true self that can claim this. As we begin to work with this, we actually begin to move towards that realization. And then we actually move beyond the limitations or agendas that were prescribed for us by our culture, our religion, our government, whatever, and also, you know, our families and, I suppose, what the small self thinks it's supposed to be in order to get what it wants in the world. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, it does, yes. And,
good.
And the one thing that, you know, I you mentioned about, you know who I am, and there was actually one part in the book, your book, there was the section on freedom. Mm-hmm. And there was a, I don't know if you would call it a mantra, or, but it was the idea of laying claim to the idea of, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and read it, just because I, you know,
sure.
and tell me, and if you can tell me, you know, exactly, you know, what you felt like when you received that message. It was
all right.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's something to say for yourself. On this day, I choose to release myself from all expectations of how things should be or what they should look like as perceived by the small self. And in this claim of freedom, I realize myself as the one who is independent from the foils and beliefs of collective agreement that would seek to hinder me from my true expression as my true self.
Mm-hmm.
I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. I am here. I am here. I'm here. That, to me, that was like a real powerful,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I could see myself saying that to myself constantly as a reminder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's what the guides say is it's a claim of truth. So you're making the claim and you're supporting it energetically. And I believe the guides are supporting us as well when we operate with their teaching and their language. How did I feel when it came through? I was probably in the energy of it, but I was still taking the dictation. So during these sessions, when the book is coming through, I'm in a chair with a phone and three tape recorders, unless that was channeled during that period when I was in either at Esalen or in live streams or in workshops, because a number of the chapters were dictated in front of people.
Right.
But mostly I'm just trying to keep up with what's next. So I'm not having the same experience as the reader or the listener is, because if you can imagine, I'm kind of like reading, it's like reading ticker tape, one line at a time, one thing after the next, after the next. I'm just trying to keep up with it. And sometimes they dictate a mile a minute. There's a wonderful woman who's been transcribing these things. Thank God she must have the patience of a saint. Because I did the first few books and it's tough, you know?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Well, you know, and I think my thought was when I read that, that was the kind of verbiage that I think the reader would recognize and feel as an energetic attunement, you know, something
yes,
that
very much so.
That they would feel. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. One of the, you know, we were talking a little bit about truth and how, you know, changes are being made. And there was one statement in the book which says, that which is not in truth will not stand changes. And it seems that we're right now in a world of changes. So with change, so many people react in a fearful way. How would we, what's the guys have to say about, this attunement, this kind of attunement to truth, when, change happens and fear pops up?
Well, the big thing, there's a few things to say. The guides would say that the true self is never afraid, because the true self doesn't exist at that level of agreement that fear does.
Okay.
So if you're working as and with the true self, you get to bypass some of this stuff. But, we can be taught by our fear as well. And, I know that, if I'm never going to cook bacon again with my clothes off. I did that when I was a student in college. Boy, that hurt. I'm never going to do that again. I learned a big lesson. One of the simplest teachings that the guides have brought through, and they bring this through whenever they teach, is they say, the action of fear is to claim more fear. And they say every choice you've ever made in fear more than likely has gotten you more of the same. And just look at the last thing you chose because you were frightened. So we're being given a lot of opportunities to act on our fear. And that's not necessarily constructive, because more than likely we're going to get more afraid. That doesn't mean that we don't have our responses to things. I think, the divine self may call some people out in the street in protest, and they may call some people to prayer, and it may, during the height of the AIDS epidemic is when I was volunteering as an energy healer, and that was my way of supporting my community, and other friends of mine were marching in the street, and I think we both were doing what we needed to do, do you understand, in response to a very specific time. I think how we're all called to action is very much based on the consciousness that we hold and the individual abilities that we have. I have a friend named Brent. He's a nice guy, and he's a big man. He's like 6'2", 6'4". He looks like Paul Bunyan. And I once read for a mutual friend of ours, and I saw Brent going, what am I here for? What am I here for? What am I here for? And staring up at the sky on this path that he was on, and he saw a tree trunk lying in the road, a fallen tree in the road. And because he's a big man, he just bent down and picked up the tree and moved it out of the road and kept going, what am I here for? What am I here for? And the lesson was, he was there to move the tree out of the road, and everybody who came behind him could now pass. You see, very often what we're called to do is given to us, and it's in front of us. If we're willing to open to receive it, the guides say the true self, the divine self, through the claim, I am here, I am here, I am here, which they say is the divine self claiming purview, calls to it what it requires to demonstrate itself through, which again sort of takes the whole onus off of us to figure everything out.
It would be much easier to have it brought to us, quite honestly, a lot of people that I've spoken with, the answers that we're seeking are really right around us, but we're sometimes so entrenched in our daily routine and perspective that we fail to recognize that.
We're looking for what we think should be there, and perhaps there are other ways to access that information, through our own knowing. I mean, I'm not saying that we get handed everything on a silver platter. I am saying that I think that if we're moving in alignment, we do call to us what we need to grow through. I was a teacher for many, many years, and I was a good teacher. I really loved it, But when in retrospect, I never really looked for teaching jobs. They all just sort of arrived in this weird way, and I'm very grateful for that. There were other things that didn't work so well where I was really efforting and trying and thinking it should all work because I was putting the time in, and it didn't. But, you know, the teacher that I was really supported me in preparing me for some of the work that I do now, and I'm grateful for that. So, you know, that's where trust does come into play. And they do say it's all about alignment because they say we're always claiming our reality, you know, in one way or another, because we agree to everything we see. It couldn't be there without our agreement. Doesn't mean we made it happen. It just does mean that we're in energetic accord to it, individually or collectively or both, because we're present there to see it, and how we see anything informs the thing that we see.
Yeah. So when we are kind of asked to live in alignment with the truth, how does that manifest? I mean, how do we? I guess the first question is, how do we know really for us individually what is, you know, our truth and our actions supporting that?
Well, you're still, I think, referencing truth as an
idea. In that small sense.
Yeah, okay. Kind of like, you know, is my truth, this is a good relationship for me or not? I guess that's up to us, you know, about these things. And I think we can move into that resonance and into our own knowing. I think that what the guides are talking about is a little different. I'm going to give you an example. If I have all these ways where I'm terribly self-critical, I'm not happy with how my body looks these days, my diet stinks, I've got all this work I've got to do on myself.
Mm-hmm.
But what I also end up doing is deciding who I am based on these things. Now, the true self or the divine self doesn't have these issues. My small self is having a field day and a temper tantrum, saying, you know, I want it figured out yesterday. So my small self is having one response. The true self that I am, if I can align to that, can probably support the whole transformation if and when it's needed. But, you know, I also assume where I think I should be based on what I look around and see. And again, you know, some people, I think, myself included, some of the hardships that I've experienced in my life have been my greatest teachers and have prepared me for the work that I do. Now, when I was going through them, I'm like, screw this. Who wants to go through this stuff? But in retrospect, you know, I was being supported in learning and growing in other ways. So my small self wants things his way and yesterday. And the true self, I suppose, and I'm just taking a guess here, knows exactly where he is and what is required to know himself through. So that's my poor attempt at an example today.
Okay.
I should let the guys
through. It's actually a good example, you know, and because my sense is then that, you know, if we are going to live in alignment with that energetic field truth, then if I'm having the same issues of body image and weight and all those things, then whenever I have that critical thinking, is to recognize that, you know, in the truth, in the energetic field, that isn't really where I should focus. That's just self-criticism. That doesn't go to the essence of who I am and what I am, and what I'm here to do.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Okay. That's one thing I like about your book. It kind of gets you thinking. What am I going to do?
Hopefully.
You're great. Well, let's see. And I have just one more question before we close out the show. And that is that quite often your guides talk about the importance of service. So can you talk? I mean, I think, you know, because you know, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, your work and your friend's work when in crisis. So it seems that service is, from their perspective, a very important aspect to this life.
Yes, but probably not in the ways that most of us think. So most of us think, well, I'm going to be of service and I'm going to go do this or that, which sounds like service, because there are certain professions and acts that have been equated with that. I mean, in my practice as a psychic, I've read for a bunch of very miserable social workers who would rather be doing something else, and some unhappy nurses, mm-hmm. too, and some gloriously happy nurses, and some completely evolved and wonderful social workers. So just because we've mm-hmm. chosen one of these things doesn't necessarily mean it's the right path for us. The guides say that how each of us serves is how we're most completely or fully realized as our true self. And it's through that realization and the expression of it that we're of service. So each one of us has a way of being realized. You know, I've had in my practice the opportunity to read for lots of different kinds of people. And I'm not a rock and roller, but I once read for, a few times I've actually read for rockers that filled stadiums, you know. And I mm-hmm. turned into this man who was perfectly nice. This perfectly nice guy, I liked him, you know, but I didn't know his work. I mean, I knew his band. But when I turned right. into him, I understood, when I stepped into his field, why he could hold a whole stadium full of people in his energy field. He was able to do that. That is how he serves. It's an extraordinary ability. You see, now, you know, what he does with his money and how he helps the world, that's other stuff. His expression, right. in many ways, was what I was tuning into. And I think we're all here to be expressed as our true selves. We just have some kind of limited ideas of what that's supposed to look like.
Okay. Wow, that's great. Well, we're down to the end of the show, so is there maybe any... Mm-hmm. Any messages, any comments that you may want to make that we didn't cover, maybe in particular with the Book of Truth?
No, I don't think so. You know, this has been my day to do interviews, so you were the last of the day, and so I okay. hope I stayed coherent. But I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak about the work and to speak with you. And no, I think anything anybody would want to find out about my work is probably on the website. And that's, as you said, there for anybody who wants to visit.
Great. I appreciate it. And I hope I was coherent, even though I stumbled a few times there too. But, all right. Well, thank you very much again for your time, Paul. And I look forward to the third in the trilogy when that is chosen to be translated or transcribed.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Paul Selig. We've been talking about his book, The Book of Truth. It is the second book in the Mastery Trilogy. And again, you can find out more about Paul and all that he has to offer by visiting his website, which is www.paulselig.com. And that's PaulSelig.com. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.